everybody. You are listening to the MEDEA podcast series. MEDEA Medical Education Academy is a global medical education provider dedicated to designing, delivering, and evaluating medical education programs worldwide. Our podcast series wants to bring to you a new way of delivering medical education, allowing to gain knowledge in an easy and accessible way, ideal for continuing medical education. In this episode, we have two important professors, Nina Papathanasopoulou and Sandro Esteves, engaged in a chat on Greek mythology and andrology as an introduction to the upcoming Continuing Medical Education program, introducing the Aphrodite criteria for male infertility diagnosis, prognosis, and management, which will take place on April 19, 2024.
Hello, everyone. I am Nina Papathanasopoulou. I'm a professor of classical studies, specializing in classical mythology and Greek drama. I studied and taught in the US for a long time. I did my PhD at Columbia University in New York City. And now I'm currently based in Greece, where I teach at college year in Athens, a study abroad program for students who come to Greece for a semester abroad. And I have been teaching myth for 25 years. And I am very interested in the myth's various interpretations and in the ways in which myths are used today and are reinterpreted in various ways. I am here today with Sandro Esteves from Brazil, and I am very excited to be part of a conversation with him. Sandro, how are you? Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and why do we call you an international expert in male infertility?
Hi, Nina. Thanks for having me. I am a urologist specialized in treating male infertility with over 25 years of experience in clinical and academic settings. I'm the founder and medical director of AndroFert, which is a fertility center based in Campinas, Brazil, dedicated to male reproductive health. I'm also a professor of urology at the University of Campinas here in Brazil, where I'm based, and an honorary professor of reproductive medicine at Aarhus University in Denmark. So I have been interested in contributing to the understanding of male infertility with many publications, lectures, and also my clinical work.
So Sandro, you're one of the chairs of the next MEDEA, the Medical Education Academy program, entitled Introducing the Aphrodite Criteria for Male Infertility Diagnosis, Prognosis, and Management, to be taking place online on April 19, 2024, at 1 p.m. Central European time. Is this meeting going to be about Greek mythology or about male infertility?
Well, Nina, the focus of the workshop is to introduce what we consider a groundbreaking advancement in the field of male infertility, the Aphrodite criteria, which essentially represent a patient classification system for male infertility management. In our case, Aphrodite is an acronym, short for addressing male patients with hypogonadism and or infertility owing to altered idiopathic testicular function.
So can you explain a little bit more what the connection is between Greek mythology and Aphrodite in this webinar?
Actually, we chose this acronym to make a link with the ancient Greek goddess Aphrodite. But Nina, you are the best person I know to explain this connection.
Well, I have to say, Aphrodite seems like a good acronym for these criteria, as she was a Greek goddess of fertility, male sexuality, and procreation. And so she is a good female counterpart for Poseidon, which, as I know, was the acronym that you use for criteria to determine women's infertility. So now I'm more than happy to give you some information about Aphrodite. Aphrodite is an ancient Greek goddess associated with love, lust, beauty, pleasure, passion, procreation. And her Roman counterpart is Venus, goddess of desire, sex, fertility, prosperity, and victory. Aphrodite is imagined as the most beautiful of goddesses who elicits desire in all beings, humans, gods, and animals. Her power is so great that even she herself is subjected to it. She too can't resist it, feels erotic desire for others, and falls in love with beautiful humans. Her origin story has her be born from the sea, and so she's often associated with seashells and swans, while her fertility is often shown with a depiction of flowers and roses. She's also linked to doves and sparrows. birds that may allude to the fleeting nature of love. The cult of Aphrodite was largely derived from that of the Phoenician goddess Astarte, a cognate of the East Semitic goddess Ishtar, whose cult was based on the Sumerian cult of Inanna. Ishtar was also a warrior goddess, and Aphrodite is sometimes seen as coming armed in a chariot to participate in the battles of love. In the region of Laconia, so that's the region where Sparta is located in the Peloponnese in Greece, she was probably worshipped also as a warrior goddess. And it's important to note here that Sparta was a military society, and so many of their gods were imagined as being engaged in military activity as well. Aphrodite's main cult centers were in Kythera, an island south of the Peloponnese, in Cyprus, an island that's actually in the Mediterranean near the Middle East, in Corinth, again in the Peloponnese, and in Athens. In her iconography, that means the way that she's represented in ancient Greek art, we first see her with sumptuous robes and much jewelry. So she's always presented as being sort of highly decorated and really adorned. It is only in the 4th century that we have a portrayal of Aphrodite naked. And this is a statue that was probably made by Praxiteles and was placed in the sanctuary in Cnidos on the coast of Asia Minor. This is the first statue that we know of Aphrodite naked, and one that we think is one of the most well-known representations of the goddess, and one that became really influential for later representations of the goddess as well.
That's absolutely amazing. But Nina, can you explain to us a little bit more about the approach to male infertility in ancient Greece?
Yes, absolutely. So as I said, Aphrodite is the goddess of fertility, and the Greeks actually had lots of gods for fertility, so lots of gods that represented and symbolized fertility. And this is because infertility was very much a notion of concern in ancient Greece. Infertility in ancient Greece seems to denote a liminal state in which affected patients begin to believe that any impediments or obstacles to reproduction can be removed, cured, or bypassed in some way. Infertility is thus different from barrenness, which is used to describe an irreversible state, a state that cannot be treated. It is interesting that in ancient Greece, there are no nouns for infertility, sterility, or barrenness. Only the adjectives aphoros, not bearing, and the adjective atopos, not having given birth, are used. And these epithets are actually used for the most part for women. The main sources that we have that deal with infertility in ancient Greece are the following. The Hippocratic Corpus, around 60 anonymous medical texts of the 5th and 4th centuries BCE associated with the doctor Hippocrates of Kos, three of which are extensively concerned with reproductive failure and its treatment. Another source is the 4th century BCE physician Diocles of Caristus, who talks about infertility and its causes. And third, we have Aristotle, especially his works, Generation of Animals and History of Animals, which discuss infertility and focus on the reasons for which some humans cannot procreate. For Aristotle, procreation comes from both partners. So the causes for infertility are often found in the matching of the partners. In this case, Aristotle tells us that the best solution is to change partners. So Aristotle thinks really that infertility comes from a mismatch of partners. And so the number one thing that he suggests is changing partners. However, Aristotle also discusses in more detail male infertility. For him, offspring is created through the union of male and female. The male supplies what he calls the seminal fluid, while the woman supplies her egg. Aristotle explains that infertility can be caused by a man's weak seminal fluid, either because there is not enough quantity or because the quality is not strong enough. The exact reasons for this, however, remain unknown. At the same time, it's important to note that even though there's discussion about male infertility, infertility was for the most part assigned to women. So as with men, the eggs of women can be weak, or there can be some dysfunction or imperfection in their bodies. The anatomy of the body, the shape, size, composition of the uterus or womb might have some issue. And treatments that are discussed for this include purging and bathing, changing diets, use of probes of tin or lead sometimes to insert into the vagina, softening and moistening the womb. Finally, another way to treat infertility is actually divine intervention. Since the Greeks very much believed that diseases can be a form of divine punishment, they also thought that treatment can come from divine interventions. So the Greeks would consult oracles, the oracle of Apollo at Delphi, the oracle of Zeus at Dodona, and they could also seek help from Asclepius, the main healing god of the Greeks, who had over 100 sanctuaries all over the Greek-speaking world. In Asclepius' sanctuary, and especially his famous sanctuary in Epidaurus in the Peloponnese, patients would spend the night in this building called the Abaton in the hopes that Asclepius would visit them in their sleep or dreams and offer some form of cure. This process was called incubation. Today, we don't have the opportunity to visit Asclepius in his sanctuary, but luckily we have the opportunity to visit doctors like you.
That's a privilege indeed.
So Sandro, can you please explain to us why clinicians have now recognized the need to improve the assessment and management of male infertility, especially in real-world settings?
Well, in the past, treatment often centered on women. We now know that there are many causes of infertility that are male-driven or are combined between both partners. We know that some cases of male infertility can be alleviated through lifestyle, for example, or clinical interventions, like some surgical interventions. And also our knowledge about the complexity of sperm production, what we call spermatogenesis, has increased. And also the potential role of medication, like for example, exogenous gonadotropins injections, has emerged. I personally feel it's essential that the clinician fully investigates and accurately diagnoses the cause of male infertility so the patient's prognosis is appropriately calculated and communicated. So we need to have this good communication between doctor and patients. And I hope that with the introduction of the Aphrodite criteria for male infertility management, we can improve the diagnosis, classification, and management of infertile men.
Very nice. So Sandro, can you also perhaps tell us a little bit more about the connection between the Aphrodite criteria and the Poseidon criteria? Like, why did you mention Poseidon in some publications? And what is the connection between the Aphrodite and the Poseidon criteria, scientifically speaking?
A few years ago, we developed a classification system for women undergoing assisted reproductive technology and called it the Poseidon criteria. As you explained already, Poseidon was an ancient Greek god related to women's fertility. Since its introduction, we have introduced this criteria for the scientific community, the Poseidon criteria have gained much attention. And today we have over 100 scientific papers, or perhaps even more, exploring its utility for female infertility management. But recently, we also found the need to develop a classification system for male infertility. Nina, male infertility is a complex clinical condition, but thus far, the clinical management of men with reduced fertility and impaired spermatogenesis has been fraught with difficulties and limited advancement. This is a frustrating condition to clinicians and patients, and it also perpetuates the belief that ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injection, is the only solution to provide the couple with a baby without the need to explore the nature or cause of the underlying male infertility. So we have been inspired by the Poseidon concept that we developed a few years ago, and a group of experts in male infertility then developed the Aphrodite criteria. We relied on clinical patient descriptions and routine lab tests, such as the semen analysis and hormonal assessment, in particular FSH and testosterone levels, to categorize male infertility patients into 5 groups, each with its particular characteristics. We also provide suggestions for unified clinical management using hormonal therapy.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit more about who these experts are?
Of course. So besides myself, the group includes Peter Humaiden and Niels Johansen from Denmark, Filippo Baldi, Carlo Alvigi, Manuela Simoni, and Daniele Santi from Italy. We have Chris Barrett and Alan Pacey from the United Kingdom.
Lynn Antonio from Belgium, and also Hermann Behri from Germany.
Okay. So then, Sandro, can you tell us a little bit more about the workshop that you're organizing on these Aphrodite criteria?
Well, I have got the help of Medea Medical Education Academy to develop this workshop and its complementary online activities. The workshop is entirely based on our recent publication featured on the journal RBM Online, which explains the Aphrodite criteria from A to Z. So in brief, this publication explains the biological and physiological knowledge related to spermatogenesis. We present the concept of the Aphrodite criteria and then describes the application of this criteria in specific clinical scenarios. So Nina, the new Aphrodite criteria provides an urgently needed system to characterize infertility in men seeking paternity and who may also be candidates for hormonal treatment. But it's important for everyone to understand that these criteria are not designed for men with confirmed infertility diagnosis, such as, for example, varicocele, infection, or obstruction, because these patients would not benefit from hormonal treatment. Then to understand the Aphrodite criteria, we need to remind ourselves about the biology of human spermatogenesis, which takes approximately 75 days and is mainly controlled by FSH and LH-driven testosterone. You know, LH is crucial for spermatogenesis because it stimulates testosterone production in Leydig cells. FSH, also a hormone secreted by the pituitary gland, works in synergy with LH and testosterone, acting on Sertoli cells to provide essential metabolic and structural support for spermatogenesis. But we have patients with reduced fertility and impaired spermatogenesis that may face inadequate testicular stimulation by these hormones that could be caused by deficient production or action, or FSH, LH, or both. There is one particular condition called hypogonadism, which is characterized by insufficient testosterone production that may have various causes, including testicular pathologies, systemic diseases, infection, congenital abnormalities, even aging and poor lifestyle. In some cases, this condition, hypogonadism, which is very common, remains elusive, and we call it idiopathic. So this biological knowledge has been fundamental to developing the Aphrodite criteria, which have simple key objectives relevant to our male patients.
Okay, this is all very interesting. So can you also talk to us about these key objectives? Like, what are these key objectives that are relevant to the male patients?
Well, we consider that by classifying male infertility patients using the Aphrodite criteria and using our proposed therapeutic management, two key objectives may be achieved. First, improvement of semen quantity and or quality for natural conception. And second, improvement of semen quantity, I'm talking about number, and quality, for instance, I'm talking about DNA integrity as part of the couple's ART journey.
So you mentioned that there's these five groups that you've classified these male patients into. And I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about the characteristics of each of these five groups.
I will provide you some brief information. Of course, I want all the listeners to come to the workshop. But obviously, let's talk a little bit about the groups, because we fully characterized these groups, providing a suggested therapeutic management and also defining relevant endpoints. So for instance, we have patients in Aphrodite group one. These patients have congenital or acquired hypogonadotropic hypogonadism. These patients present with a hormonal disorder caused by deficient gonadotropin production from the pituitary gland, which prevents their testicles from producing sperm. Typically, these patients have low FSH, LH, and testosterone levels, usually combined with azoospermia, I mean no sperm in the ejaculate, or less frequently severe oligosospermia, which means low sperm numbers. So we have gonadotropin therapy, for example, with HCG and FSH, that can restore spermatogenesis in up to 90% of these patients, offering them hope for fatherhood. Then we have Aphrodite group two, that is made up mostly of patients with idiopathic oligospermia and selected cases of non-obstructive azoospermia. These individuals exhibit abnormal semen analysis, a normal physical examination, and a normal laboratory results suggestive of functional hypogonadism. We have data showing that FSH therapy has promise in improving semen parameters and pregnancy rates for these patients, and it might also work in some patients with non-obstructive azoospermia. Then we have Aphrodite group 3, which is a variation of group 2. But in contrast to group 2, these patients have reduced testosterone levels, indicating biochemical hypogonadism. Then in this patient population, we feel that combining HCG with FSH may be beneficial because HCG can boost intratesticular testosterone production and then can improve sperm production as well. So interestingly, some patients with non-obstructive azoospermia, which is the most severe male infertility condition to treat, that fits in Aphrodite group 3, have experienced improvements in sperm retrieval rates after hormonal treatment. I mean sperm retrieval rates because we need to collect sperm from the testicle using surgical procedures to be able to find the sperm for patients with non-obstructive azoospermia. Then we can move on to Aphrodite group 4, a group that includes patients with non-obstructive azoospermia who have high FSH and low testosterone levels, indicating a condition that we call hypergonadotropic hypogonadism. These men have low testicular reserve, making them a very challenging patient to treat. Despite that, a few observational studies have shown that hormonal treatment improves sperm retrieval rates in some instances. And finally, we have Aphrodite group 5, which includes patients with unexplained infertility. So patients with unexplained infertility from the male standpoint are the patients who have no history of diseases affecting fertility, and they have normal semen analysis parameters, normal physical examination, and normal laboratory findings. This is why we call them unexplained. So it has been postulated that FSH stimulation, I mean hormonal therapy with FSH, might benefit these patients by enhancing spermatogenesis. So the hypothesis being that spermatogenesis does not run at its maximum capacity, and additional FSH stimulation could potentially boost spermatogenesis.
Wow, this all sounds very promising. So can you tell us one more time why these Aphrodite criteria are important as of today?
Of course. We feel that the Aphrodite criteria advance the stratification and management of male infertility. The criteria provide a clear and well-defined system classifying patients and promoting communication among, for example, healthcare providers, urologists, gynecologists, embryologists, researchers, and also patients. Also, this criteria opened doors to research into new pharmacological interventions and also discovery of novel causes of male infertility.
Thank you, Sandro. This is all very interesting. Is there any final message that you want to tell our listeners?
Sure, Nina. I'm very excited about what this approach could mean for the future of male infertility treatment and also research. But to learn more, I invite all listeners to attend our workshop, taking place online on April 19th, 2024, 1 p.m. Central European Time. Registration is free of charge and can be made at mediaacademy.com/event/Aphrodite2024. I hope to see you all in April.
Thank you, Sandro. It was really a pleasure talking to you today, and I wish you all the best at the webinar that you're going to be hosting in April.
It was my pleasure, Nina. Thank you for having me, and I hope we continue this collaboration about medicine, especially reproductive medicine and the Greek mythology.
To learn more about the upcoming CME program, introducing the Aphrodite criteria for male infertility diagnosis, prognosis, and management, please visit our website, mediaacademy.com/event/Aphrodite2024.